Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. Dave Allen joins us once again this afternoon as we welcomed him last Friday, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is December 22nd. It's Friday. It's 2017. First, I'm going to say good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon.
We got a little bit of a bad connection. I'm not sure. Are you still there?
Melody, I am here. Is everything okay?
I hear you now.
Awesome.
So,
my apologies. Hello. Season's greetings to you and our listeners.
All righty. I just want to remind the listeners, we had a little technical problems getting you connected by Skype, so you are on your cell, and so we'll just have to weather through it for this afternoon. Once again, thank you for joining the program, and today we have Wendy Wilson joining us of Apothecary Herbs. She will be with us for the complete first segment of the program today. So let's get started right away. But first, we're going to do the market report. Gold had a great day today, as I knew, you know, once all of these things come out. And of course, there's light trading today with it going into the Christmas weekend. We had a high of 1277 for gold. It's pulled back a little bit, 1274.80 for gold, up 770. Silver's up 1.3%, 22 cents at $16.42. Platinum was up $3 at $924. And palladium was holding at 1,039. The USDX today was stronger by 0.02 at 93.31, and crude oil was down a penny at 58.35. Paper markets today, I expected them to be higher. They were low slightly, just slightly lower. Down 27 points for the Dow at 24,754. The NASDAQ was down 5 at 6,959. And the S&P was down 1 at 2,683. 10-year yield is up 0.16% at 2.49%, and the euro was 118, down 0.02, and Bitcoin is certainly plummeting of 13,149. I don't know if I'll have a chance to talk about Bitcoin today, but I did get a email from a client earlier, but we'll talk about that later. First, we're going to go to Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Melody and Dave. How is everybody?
Merry Christmas.
Well, I hope Dave's feeling. Yeah, I hope you're feeling better, Dave.
Getting there,
good. Well, I thought today we would talk about how science is altering viruses, and when they do that, scientific evidence is showing that they become more lethal. So the researchers are producing some very lethal agents that would make, I guess, the Ebola pandemic kind of look like a nosebleed. So Pandora's box doesn't even come close to the disaster they could create. So this is a secret and deadly world of disease editing that we're going to talk about real quick here today. According to some media reports, the U.S. federal government has ended a they've ended a three-year hold on all funds that support research involving altering infectious pathogens in order to weaponize them beyond what nature intended. So why was it lifted? It's not really clear, but the ban did little to stop scientists in researching this area of pathology. So as we reported previously, scientists that would want to conduct experiments on prohibited things, they would just take their research offshore, use a lab, floating lab on a vessel out at sea, and so forth. So media is now saying they try to soothe the fears of people. They're kind of worried about this, but they're saying, hey, there's a panel of experts at the National Institutes of Health, and they're going to manage the approval process of all this research on gene germ altering. And so the National Institutes of Health is going to decide which if the contrived benefits justify the risk of messing with dangerous pathogens. For instance, science wanted to take the common cold and make it into a more serious respiratory infectious disease that they could seek approval and funding to make this happen. Well, I give to you MERS virus, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome pathogen. It was taken from a standard coronavirus, and a coronavirus produces some respiratory symptoms. You may think you have a rhinovirus or the common cold, so it's in that same family. So that got tweaked, and then we got MERS. Any questions so far?
Nope. Go right ahead.
Well, let's get some quotes here from some of the scientists. Dr. Francis Collins, head of the National Institutes of Health, says, in October 2014, efforts were already underway to make three viruses more dangerous, influenza, MERS, and SARS. And SARS is your severe acute respiratory syndrome. So this is where these are coming from. These are man-tweaked types of viral infections. Also, Collins goes on to say, a request to create an Ebola virus that is transmissible through the air has also been received. Goodness. And also Donald McNeil Jr., he is a scientific reporter. He specializes in plagues and pestilence. He says, in 2011, scientists in laboratories in Wisconsin and the Netherlands revealed their concern with research being conducted to mutate the lethal bird flu strain H5N1 and encourage it to jump from birds to ferrets. Ferrets are often used to make diseases jump to humans. End of quote. Yeah.
Wow.
So you may be asking, you know, why? Why do scientists want to, you know, take infections, alter them, and cause them to be more virulent forms of infections? Well, the only reasons that I can see, majority of them come down to money and prestige within the scientific community. Scientists call this kind of research gain of function to supposedly gain knowledge on pathogens that are really deadly and transmissible. And then, hey, we'll just make a vaccine. What do you think?
Sure, why not?
Well, according to Dr. Collins, the National Institutes of Health says, some scientists are so eager to pursue these studies because they may show how a bird flu could mutate to more easily infect humans or could yield clues for making better vaccines. So this is the agenda. You know, more disease, more money. That's how it looks.
More money, more money, more money.
Plus,
I mean, don't they want some sort of, I shouldn't say they want one, but I mean, we're kind of all anticipating some sort of a pandemic.
Well, pandemics, they lend themselves to making supposedly hasty made vaccines. And then if you'll notice, those pathogen strains that they made vaccines for wind up in your influenza vaccines, your annual flu shots. Yeah. Bird flu, that's how bird flu went. And so we're going to see some other ones enter the flu shot too. You have your quivalent vaccines now, so get ready. Well, anyone who understands, though, these pathogens and how they tend to mutate, it takes years for a mutation to occur. And in some instances, it can take centuries. So with regards to these animal pathogens crossing over to infect humans, it really takes some interference from man directly to break those limits and make that happen. So when you create vaccines to protect man, it's not the motivation to protect us from being sick from disease. The research is indicating they're creating new disease to make vaccines and inject us with that disease that was not a threat to man to begin with.
Solution in search of a problem.
Well, yeah. Well, there's lots of new and deadly pathogens. And, you've probably heard the horror stories that, you know, they escape the lab a lot. The threat of disease added to a vaccine is not our only problem. 100% secure labs, they don't exist. That's like looking for a unicorn. Okay. So no matter how rigorous their policy is, the nature of man, you know, there's the protocols aren't enforced. People get bribed and pathogens disappear. Insecure shipments from lab to lab. I mean, there's all kind of dynamics that can really sabotage any kind of, you know, best laid plan to keep a lab and a disease and lockdown. Here is Donald McNeil, science reporter again. He says, critics say that these researchers are putting us all at risk for creating a monster germ that could escape the lab and start a pandemic. And then he goes on to say, in 2014, the CDC accidentally exposed lab workers to anthrax and then shipped that deadly pathogen along with a deadly flu virus to a laboratory not equipped to handle them. He adds, in 2014, the National Institutes of Health, they found a 50-year-old vial of smallpox virus that had been forgotten in a freezer. So... you know, I don't have much confidence in them keeping us safe from pathogens. What do you think?
You know, I remember after Hurricane Katrina, there was a lot of reports that there was facilities where they stored these that got flooded.
Yeah,
some
and then
went missing.
The electricity went out, and then things got hot, you know?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And
well,
we never hear the stories, but...
Right. Well, and I don't think people think that far ahead. They don't... Look at the what-ifs, you know, and, oh, we got backup generators. Well, they crapped out, too.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, Michael Osterholm, he's a director of the Center of Infectious Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. He says, I hope the National Institute of Health panel turns down this kind of work. This should be, there should be restrictions on what research labs are publishing. That if they discover a way to make Ebola more dangerous, they would not want to publish that work for everybody for nefarious purposes. And physicists long ago learned to distinguish between what can publicly be available and what is classified. So few people understand that diseases will be in a vaccine to create your pandemics. Research shows that viral vaccines cause recipients to shed the disease about for 28 days, and then you infect more people. So that was already proven by previous research back in 2006. Well, let me ask you guys, what do you suppose a pathogen profile has to be before the National Institutes of Health say, yeah, let's make something dangerous out of that?
What?
Why? What does a disease have to have? What characteristics do you think it has to have for the NIH to say, yeah, let's go ahead and do that one?
You tell us.
Well, first of all, before they even crack open the cell of an infectious disease to manipulate it, they need a high security lab to conduct that research in, so they need to have approval to do that. Next, the pathogen must pose a serious health threat. They don't want to deal with anything that's not serious. Also, the research has to produce, get this, a vaccine. Those are the three. These are the three protocols for approval.
Wow.
All right. So, disease basically big business. Did you know Rutgers University has a biology bioweapons lab there? And prior to the National Institute of Health halting the research on the deadly pathogen mutation work, there were 21 projects in the works. In the last 3 years, the National Institute of Health has allowed exceptions to their ban that involve creating 5 new flu-related diseases, 5 new pathogens related to the MERS virus, your Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. So how much do you want to bet the average doctor doesn't know this work's going on? They're cooking the stuff in the lab and it can infect anybody at any time. They're not going to know what people have rolling into the ER.
So
that's happening.
Yeah. Well, Richard Enbright, molecule biologist, bioweapons expert, Rutgers University, he says, there's more here than meets the eye. I would prefer there be an independent panel rather than the government one. The current rules and requirements on this type of pathology research only apply to government-funded work and not all research in this field. The minimum safety standards are applied, and not all of them are clear. And there should be a mandate that the benefits of the research outweigh the risks instead of the nature of the research is enough to justify it. End of quote. Huh. We got problems. You know, it's just like a big cauldron, you know, and they're dancing around naked under the moon, shaking a bag of monkey bones and making some stuff. It's just crazy. Well, This is Mark Lipstick. He's an epidemiologist. He's also at the Center of Communicable Diseases and Dynamics at Harvard School of Public Health. He said, recent disease-enhancing experiments have given us some modest knowledge and done nothing to improve our preparedness for pandemics and even risk creating accidental pandemics. So the height of security here is, you know, it doesn't compare to the risk. It really doesn't. So, well, go ahead. You have a question?
No, it's just like, you know, like putting a bunch of kids in a candy store. I mean, it's like they're given the green light to do all this stuff and to see what they can create. I mean, it's like they're all just a bunch of monsters trying to create these.
Well, okay, so the adenovirus we covered the other month, we were talking, that's a primate virus. So now that's out there. It's out of the box. Now, WHO scientists are carrying out research on a virus only meant for camels. So the camel coronavirus has been made now to infect humans, and their test group research of 2,100 people, a third of them have died.
Wow.
All right. So, you know, the Bible warns us of the evil day, and the Bible even tells us there would be disease not yet written of in the book, that we were afraid of the plagues of Egypt. God's telling us you have no idea. So these would be pandemics so awful, 10,000 suddenly fall dead. Okay? And of course, you know, God has given us some wisdom to avoid all this, you know, from Genesis to Revelation, if you care to read it. So a pathogen that has recently plagued the United States and the UK, the primate virus, that causes that acute long-term respiratory infection, and medical doctors don't have any tools to help. So primate viruses are for primates, but they were deliberately created to infect humans. So I'm sure this pathogen is going to be added to your influenza or pneumonia vaccine in the future. And a similar example is your bird flu strains. New human diseases seem to end up in the influenza vaccine. And viral vaccines, according to, this is MedImmune LLC, their study on vaccine viral shedding of 2006, they say that you shed the virus from the day you get the vaccine for 28 days, and 39 to 60% or 90% of the individuals inoculated infect others and get infected themselves. So it's about spreading disease, it looks like to me.
Well, you know, also I've been hearing a lot. I don't know how much time we have left. You better give us some contact information. But a lot of people that I know that have been getting the flu and so forth that end up in the hospital, they just they're turning sepsis.
Yeah, blood poisoning.
That's yeah,
the blood gets so toxic. In other,
yeah,
see, a lot of these viruses they'll produce, you know, infectious toxins, and then you've got organ failure. I know, it's terrible. Hey, there's herbs for that.
I'll give out your contact.
Monday. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back. Listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my guest, Dave Allen, well, co-host Dave Allen, and I want to welcome him to the program once again. We are having technical difficulties, and I would expect if it gets too hard, we have a little bit of a delay between the communications between him and I, and we'll see how this next segment goes. And because we do have lots to talk about, and the big news this week, of course, was the taxes and everything. And I just want to remind you folks, before I go any further, make sure you give Wendy Wilson a call. Visit the website at thepowerherbs.com, and her telephone number is 866-229-3663. That's thepowerherbs.com for the website. She's got great information. And, of course, she also has an article in our newsletter on a weekly basis that comes out on Monday. And if you have any issues, she's just a bundle, just a wealth of information. And her telephone number is 866-229-3663. Now we're back with Dave Allen. And Dave, would you like to be able to, could you tell us or refresh our memory as far as, give us an update of your background so the folks just tuning in today that might have missed last Friday's program will be able to say and know you.
Absolutely. Well, first things first, happy Friday, Melody.
Oh.
It's been a long time for everybody. It's good to be back on your show. I want to apologize though to listeners like I did last week. I'm still in the throes of a cold that has my head stuffy and my voice nasally, so sorry about that. For listeners who weren't able to tune into last Friday's show, I'm a writer, a community activist, and a lifelong investor. I enjoy working with others to help them reach their financial, business, and personal goals. I earned my finance chops as an analyst with the Congressional Budget Office in Washington. They've been in the news a lot the last couple of months. Besides following how gold and silver are affected by the political economy, I enjoy riding my bike with my wife, hanging with my son and daughter, and walking my dogs. Now, before we get into our issues of the day, Melody, can we give a shout out to the man and woman in red up north? You know who I'm talking about. Santa and Mrs.
Sure. Claus. I'm not sure I do.
Santa and Mrs. Claus and their harried herd of little helpers.
Oh,
way to go,
yes.
Up there, folks. We're looking forward to seeing you and your flying four-legged friends late Sunday night. I know here at the Allen household, we're hoping that Santa and the reindeer like our diabetic-friendly treats we've prepared and are planning to leave out this year.
You know, you can always tell people who have children or kids and those of us who just have dogs.
Oh, man. I know. Hey.
We're the Grinch. But
whatever gets you through the night is the fun season for many reasons.
I just want you to touch on where you really broke in, because I think that the connection wasn't that great when you were talking about how you actually got involved working with the CBO office and so forth.
Oh, geez. Well, I...
or just touch on it briefly.
We can... all right. We'll do Plan B, the short answer. Which really stems from really having grown up with a desire, I think, in the then Kennedy flurry of, asking not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And had just gone to college thinking that, like my grandparents and mother before me, that, I'm going to try and get educated and figure out how I can serve the public in some sort of public role. And as I was starting graduate school, the University of Maryland just happened to, my goal was really to work on Capitol Hill. I thought that's where the action was for a young kid, where you could learn a lot of how to move and shape the world. I'm not sure that I can pretty much guarantee you that my own experience didn't rise nearly to that level. But I landed at the CBO, worked with just a number of outstanding professionals, the best credentials from, economists, the public policy analysts, and learned really how to look at financial and budgetary issues, especially as related to the U.S. political economy. What was good about, sort of growing up there was it was a nonpartisan agency. Sure, everyone had their voter registration, a D or an R or an independent, but you could see how that played out, and I'm sure it does to this day, that on the job, you were a nonpartisan working for the betterment of the entire Congress, particularly the House and Senate Budget Committee. So that was a great 5.5-6 years of learning how to analyze issues and frame discussions and so on and so forth. It gave me a lifelong interest in that field.
Very good. Well, I know you wanted to talk about the tax bill today. We've talked about it this week. I have my personal opinions and views, and through reading various reports and parts of it and so forth. And, the biggest discussion is, what will be the general impact on the wealthy versus the low middle income folks? And, it's one moment you hear that, oh, this is just fantastic for the middle income. The next breath you'll hear, well, no, this was really just for the ones that will get the most benefits will be the multinational corporations. We've seen these huge corporations, give these little image building bonuses and commitments to spending more dollars in our economy and so forth. And, those are not lost, particularly in the climate that we have in Washington nowadays, everybody has a price and everybody is bought and paid for. So what are your, what do you think will be the, general impact, not only on the wealthy middle income, but the deficit, the debt impact?
Well, who knows for sure, right? I just can't get my mind off of this plan passed by Congress this week, and I don't know if it's been signed by the president yet, but it's expected.
He signed it today.
He's already signed it.
He signed it.
So I do have a lot to say about the subject, so please don't hesitate to stop me anytime you want to challenge or follow up on something I say. I guess there's no need to repeat all of the main provisions of the bill. We know at its heart the purpose of this bill called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is to lower federal income taxes for all individuals and corporations, and thus unleash this significant, if not unprecedented, economic growth, the likes of which the country has never seen, as the press likes to say sometimes. Whether or not, or to what extent the tax cuts are going to accomplish this, I guess, remains to be seen. What I do know, Melody, is this. This tax bill has distinct parallels to George Orwell's novel Animal Farm. I just so happened to read as an impressionable teenager several decades ago while working at a popular amusement park on the East Coast. It was a very permissive workplace. In any event, in renaming the most important one of the seven commandments of the Animal Farm, the animals were preparing for a rebellion with the humans. The pigs that were in charge of the farm the Animal Farm proclaimed that all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. And that's the crux. That's how I think it goes for this tax bill. The GOP leaders who crafted the bill say that all Americans will receive a tax cut. All Americans will benefit from this. But as we've heard, some Americans will get larger cuts than others, and in many cases, much larger cuts. And whether that's good or bad, I guess, is up to each individual. I think there are larger issues beyond just that, but that's certainly an important one. According to the nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, the bill's particularly large corporate tax cut, but also its real generous tax cut for the so-called pass-through business income that, you know, that allows owners of partnerships and S-corporations and sole proprietorships to get taxed at the same rate as wages and salaries. Its individual income tax rate cuts and the eventual elimination of the estate tax will largely benefit the most well-off. Now, Melody, it's true that the bill will provide a tax cut next year to most, if not virtually all, Americans. Again, according to the Tax Policy Center, 80% of households will see a federal tax reduction next year as a result of this bill, as compared to about 5% who will see an increase. The remaining 15% will see their taxes essentially unchanged. This is certainly improved from the previous versions of the bill because of changes to policies such as increasing the child tax credit from $1,000 to $2,000 and from increasing what they call the refundable piece of it from $1,100 to $1,400 to ensure the votes of Senator Marco Rubio and Mike Lee of Utah, but also because of more favorable rate schedules. For instance, taxable income between roughly $10,000 and $38,000 will now be taxed at a marginal rate of 12%. That's compared to 15% under current law. And coupled with that, of course, there's the doubling of the standard deduction to $24,000, even though the personal exemptions are eliminated, which is the key that other things being equal are going to it's going to be the main reason why some lower middle income people who don't qualify for the earned income tax credit will certainly see not as large of a tax cut as others, and in some cases may actually be a little worse off in both the near term and long run. What I've found interesting is that polls are showing that most voters don't expect a tax cut. A Monmouth University poll, for example, that came out this week found that just 14% of voters expect their federal taxes to go down, as compared to 50% who expect an increase. Now, once those misinformed voters realize that less is being withheld from their paycheck as a result of lower tax rates, Are they going to come around to supporting the bill? Well, maybe, maybe not. For one thing, the voters aren't necessarily wrong, even in a literal sense, if they're looking toward the long term. Because cuts to the individual tax rates are temporary. They expire in 2027. And there are reasons that that's the case. And even though the vast majority of Republicans who voted for the tax bill believe that these provisions will be extended, if not permanently, then beyond 2027. But in any event, because the tax cuts are temporary, 53% of households, including 70% of households right in the middle income area of they call it the quintile, they're going to see an increase in taxes by 2027 if the law is left intact and the rates revert to current law. About 25% will see a decrease under that scenario, according to the Tax Policy Center. Now, more broadly speaking, in 2018, the top 0.1% of households, those earning more than $3.4 million, not many of us probably listening to the program, they're going to receive an average tax cut of $193,000. And by 2027, the top 0.1% are going to be receiving 60% of the tax cut then, while the top 1% gets 83% of the tax cut. And if and when those tax cuts expire, 23 million families with incomes below $75,000 will face tax increases of over $100 a year, with an additional 88 million families in this income range largely left out of the tax cut. They'll face increases or decreases of less than $100, even as the corporate tax cuts remain in place. That's according to the Joint Committee on Taxation, which is another non-partisan analytical arm of the Congress. Now, Melody, maybe it's guys like people like Bob Greenstein, who's the president of the nonpartisan think tank Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, has the best, certainly most timely analogy. The tax bill passage has him thinking about the classic A Christmas Carol. According to Mr. Greenstein, with the tax bill, President Trump and Congress are providing a bounty to those at the top, including Ebenezer Scrooge's modern-day counterpart. At the same time, the president and House Republican leaders have indicated next year they're looking to cut health care and other basic assistance to struggling families, children, people with disabilities, and others who are less fortunate, delivering lumps of coal to millions of Tiny Tims and others across the nation.
Well,
any thoughts?
Well, we're heading into a break here in just a few seconds, so let's come back to that. How this goes, and how, I mean, you know, it's all fine and dandy to see and to talk about what it's going to do in the future, but what is it going to do, you know, how is it going to affect the deficit today, and how is it going to affect, you know, even the GDP? We saw Reagan, what happened to Reagan and his tax cuts. But we're heading into break. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen, and you're listening to Financial Survival. We'll be back right after these few short commercials.
Prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. I could say you're a new addition to Discount Gold and Silver's Financial Survival program. So,
thanks for having me. Always good to find some open arms and an extended family.
Well, you'll have them here. So, again, thank you. And, you're going to hear the debate back and forth. Oh, this is going to be good. This is for the wealthy. This is for the poor. This is for the middle class. This is this. This is that. But, you know, in a situation where we're so deep in debt and they're taking in record revenues and we're still falling short by $70 billion or more. Now we have the tax cuts. I can't even imagine. And even if this money, even if we do have some funds that trickle down, I mean, you can debate the issue both ways. It will and it won't. And I can debate both very easily. It's still an inflationary. It could be very inflationary. Some people say that's good. Other people say it's bad. I think it's great for gold. But for those who don't have gold, it's bad. Inflation eats away at your purchasing power, and so I don't know. Do even the reports of what happens to these tax cuts in 2027 and 2025? To me, I think we're going to see so many changes in the next year that it kind of renders that time almost worthless, doesn't it?
Well, it's a point well taken, Melody, because one of the things we've been hearing, because I alluded to in the last segment, was that already some in the White House and congressional GOP leadership, particularly in the House, not the Senate so much, are talking about following up this tax bill with another bill or bills to tackle issue. They're calling it, being talked about in the guise of welfare reform and entitlement reform, but what it will mean at the end of the day, depending on if these discussions follow through with and result in passage of a bill with probably substantial cuts to major programs, including Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, yeah. SNAP, food and housing assistance, and the like. So now, on the other hand, the people supporting those kinds of moves are besides saying, look, we got to make Medicare or Social Security sustainable for the next generation. They're also looking at a mandate under the budget that both houses adopted, the budget resolutions that preceded this tax cut bill. They're calling for reductions in spending from current levels of almost $6 trillion over 10 years. That's massive. So depending on your politics, I guess, or your certainly how you see a healthy economy in general. You know, that could be good for the country or good for the balance sheet. Although we've got to take, I think, a real hard look at just how it's going to affect individual groups groups of people. You know, it's interesting. This week, the president's eldest daughter, Ivanka Trump, the senior White House advisor, has been on Fox and Friends talking about promoting the tax bill. Yesterday, she talked about winning the support of Republican Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee. He's, listeners may recall, is a longtime deficit hawk who had previously vowed to never support legislation that adds one penny to the national debt. And, well, whatever happened, and there's now something being called the Corker kickback that we're not going to get into here. It's pretty speculative about whether that new provision, which apparently results in much better tax treatment for certain real estate investors, which he is one of. I'd rather not go there and save that for a future discussion. Perhaps maybe that's even for others. But what we do know is that nonpartisan and analysts are projecting the GOP tax bill is going to explode the deficit by anywhere from $1.4 trillion over the next 10 years, and maybe a lot more if the individual tax cuts aren't extended beyond their expiration date in the bill. Ms. Trump said, and Mr. Corker himself has confirmed, that you know his concerns were adequately addressed by the White House and GOP leadership. And I don't know, Melody, this just seems this is where the White House keeps getting into trouble, because you know, they're going on to say now that the senator believes the tax cuts combined with the administration's elimination of federal regulations would ultimately eliminate the U.S.'s $20.6 trillion debt. I'm quoting Ivanka here. He, Senator Corker, really believes that the tax relief, coupled with the administration's deregulatory actions, will create the growth that will start to erode and ultimately decimate a national debt that's been accrued over the last several decades. That's just pie in the sky thinking at best.
That's more than pie in the sky.
I don't know. I mean, they're propagating false information or alternative facts, as Kelly or Sean Spicer, I guess, would say. This theory, Melody, that the bill would pay for itself and even erode existing debt through increased economic growth, I mean, it's not only unsubstantiated, I mean, virtually no nonpartisan study or experts out there have found, or at least any that I've been able to research, have found that the GOP bill will be close to deficit neutral or decrease the debt-to-GDP ratio. I mean, not even the administration's own Treasury Department could come up with a clear argument for why the tax bill would generate their claimed economic growth. Which, by the way, have ranged from, you know, a total of, you know, 3% growth year to an incredulous cumulative 10% over 10 years. And, you know, despite Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin's apparent, I don't know, lie that he had over 100 of his analysts working to produce such a report, I don't know. I don't see it. I just believe it heeds us to do our research as citizens, pay attention to the details, and to consider a number of differing viewpoints, not just those that reinforce our own. And that goes, you know, doubly for people who are investing their own hard-earned money in whatever, you know, tool, stocks, bonds, gold, or silver.
You're right. With they come out with all, and it doesn't, and I'm not pointing any administration, but always in the past we get given these theories, we were given these programs but they never show us the numbers. You know, we're just supposed to accept their word, and it's just like this. I don't think people get what $20 trillion is, and that's what's and our unfunded liabilities have been reported to be $70 trillion, and there's even been some to report $200 trillion, you know, if you include our unfunded liabilities and so forth. So how do they include that? You just don't wipe out $20 trillion by increased economic growth. I mean, it's just, you're not... I mean, we would have to eliminate China to get that kind of a growth. I mean, we would
ideas here, Melody.
Pardon?
Don't give anyone any ideas here.
I mean, that's what would have to be done. I mean, we would have to completely eliminate any and all competition in global trade in order to get those kind of numbers.
Yeah, you know, it's I don't know what to call it, discouraging, outrageous, sad. I mean, it just it's tough to be an American these days. Who to believe? You know, even the so-called empirical research, you know, the it's because, you know, everyone has their own bias in the battle.
It's not tough to be an American. It's tough to know what to do with your money and how to save it and how to protect it, because, you know, people aren't getting the true facts on how it's going to affect them in the future. So, you know, they just allow their, you know, pensions and so forth, and they don't have any decisions in what they do with their funds. And, of course, everybody knows when you have that type of uncertainty, and the only place to be is in to ensure your wealth is through gold and silver. I mean, what other option do you have? And we're just not talking about a couple of trillion dollars, and we're just not talking about, you know, hey, Dave, I hope this tax would funnel down some funds into the economy. I've said it before while we've been talking about it. I that would be great. But to think that it's going to eliminate, and I think when you said to reduce spending by $6 trillion, does anybody have any idea what that will do to the economy?
Yeah, amazing. I mean, particularly, I think in terms of what is, or certainly could be, one of the first major pieces of policy to be talked about when Congress reconvenes in the new year is, you know, a potentially massive infrastructure plan. Now, who knows what that means, if it's, you know, $100 billion, $500 billion, $1 trillion, but certainly to the extent that's going to be, you know, a major push, you know, you're going to have to look for some place to pay for that, other than, you know, the next generation of taxpayers. Can I throw out just a few stats to sort of finish this particular?
Yeah, we got about 3 minutes. We got about 3 minutes.
Well, you know, just the president's. I'm struck by this. The president's own alma mater, Penn, University of Pennsylvania Wharton School, says that the tax plan as passed will increase economic growth by no more than 0.1% over the next decade, increasing debt by $1.9 to $2.2 trillion. So that's a big ouch. Now, you know, that's just one, and Wharton certainly is a credible organization. The Tax Policy Center, again, they talk about the tax bill boosting GDP by 0.8% next year alone. But then again, over a 10-year or 20-year period, having little or no impact. And I think what's more alarming is that they project that debt as a share of GDP will increase by 5 percentage points by to 2027 to 97% of GDP, and another 4 percentage points 10 years after that to 117% of GDP. We've got some work to do to keep our $20.6 trillion debt from going up, much less, reducing it to zero. What does all this mean for gold and silver investors? It probably begs a separate conversation of its own next Friday. Let's just say that the empirical evidence out there, particularly recent studies, are mixed. It depends whether you're talking about nominal GDP or real GDP, just as we talked last week about nominal interest rates and real interest rates. There's nominal GDP and real GDP, and it's really something that I hesitate with just a minute or so left to start getting into now. If I may, just to conclude today's discussion, I'm just afraid that, contrary to what our leaders in Washington want us to believe, that their tax bills set us on this path of mutually assured destruction. On the one hand, for Republicans' chances of holding on to the House and Senate next year and the White House in 2020. On the other hand, and much more importantly, the tax bill's effects on the quality of life for our children and their generation, with the possible undoing of the important social
safety net. There we are, Dave. We got to go, Dave. I hear the music, and before the end of the music, I just want to wish all the listeners and you, Dave, a very Merry Christmas. We'll be back Tuesday with a live program, and we're going to have another new guest host next week, so you're just going to have to tune in to see who it is. Dave, you'll also be back next week. And again, thank you, and thank you, listeners. Give us a call at 800-375-4188, and be safe this weekend, and God bless. Merry Christmas.